Welcome to the GBC Big Three podcast, a weekly podcast where we sit down and unpack three big questions raised from our Sunday sermon. I'm your host, Matt Willis, and today as co-host for the Big Three, I'm joined by none other than Jessica Baker. Jessica Baker, welcome to the Big Three.
Thank you. Again, always good to be here.
Oh, it's a sheer delight. You're in your scrubs. You're ready to go to the hospital and bring lives into the world.
Just a few today, a few lives to be brought in.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. But first you come into the Big Three podcast and just speak Jesus into the lives of people. That's right.
What a day. Thing. What a day.
It is a day. It is a wonderful day here in lockdown. So this week, we're continuing in this series on discipleship and the different contexts. This week, we're looking at the personal context. Mm-hmm. So I thought, a good little intro would be to ask, the personal context kind of refers to small groups, Bible study, connect groups, life groups, whatever you call them. Every Christian has a different name for them. Mm-hmm. What's been your experience of a small group?
I've had a few different experiences. I've been in three small groups since joining GBC. The mm-hmm. first one was amazing. It was with the beautiful and wise woman, Erin Forster.
Yes. Oh,
it was delightful. It was just a group of young girls and her leading the way, and it was really nice. Then I went from that to a kind of a year or two hiatus. Don't know why. I just didn't get off my butt and go to a life group. And then joined with you, Matt Willis.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You remember that? And that was just a total fail of a life group. That was... There was zero Jesus in that space.
All right, just hold up. I feel like I'm totally getting thrown under the bus here. Fail in the sense of we were all just really good friends.
Yeah.
And probably focused more on friendship than fellowship, dare
correct.
I say.
You hit the nail on the head. And I think our biggest mistake was introducing the wine too early in the night.
Not because we consumed too much of it.
No, just because it led us astray. Brought the mood down. And now, so after that one, we called it. We thought.
We did.
Let's just have hangouts rather than call it a life group.
At least
group.
We had the wisdom to kind of go, guys, I don't think that this is a life group anymore. I think that this is just a weekly hangout session.
It is a weekly, which we loved.
Love it.
Yeah, but there was minimal Jesus. Sure, we were all Christians gathering together.
But we didn't talk about it enough.
Yeah, minimal Jesus. And now I'm in an amazing group that was started up by Young Adults Ministry. Thanks for that, Matt.
No, you're welcome. You got that going. Well, listen, I felt bad, clearly. So I was like, I need to find her a good one.
These guys need discipleship ASAP. And that's a really good group. I'm loving that.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah.
Do you know what? It was actually... I attended a life group here at GBC before I even attended the church. And it was because a good friend of mine, Danielle Thompson, was my lift home from uni. She knew I wasn't at a church. She knew that I had a faith but wasn't really doing much about it. Mm-hmm. Similar, did not get off my bum, as you put it. And she was driving me home. She's like, listen, if you want to lift home from uni on Wednesdays – It's Bible study night, so you've got to come.
Oh, wow.
She did not. So it happened at the church. Like, thank goodness I'm a, raging extrovert. But the girls, young adult life group happened downstairs. The guys happened upstairs.
Got split from your ride.
Got split straight off the bat. But she did not even bother to walk me upstairs and introduce me to anyone. So I was just this random bloke walked into this church. She literally points from downstairs and she's like, that's your room. And so I just had to walk in. I remember. And it was huge, 15 dudes. And then I just walked in. And I just remember saying, waving and saying, hi, I'm Matt, I'm new. And it was bizarre.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, it was terrifying.
So she did a great thing forcing you into the life group. Probably could have made the transition smoother.
Listen, could have softened it a little bit. Could have softened it.
It's a learning, learning tool for next time.
I guess that's what we're going to be talking about on the Big Three today. How do we make sure that life groups go well?
And aren't traumatic for everyone involved. Very good. Well, excellent. I'm excited. Clearly we need this.
Clearly we need it. It's timely. It's timely. Well, in a moment, we're going to be joined by Mark Rader, who preached during our online services this past Sunday. And Jess and I will be putting the big three questions to him as we dive deeper into the invitation from this week's sermon. For those of you who missed it, Mark continued in our series, The Topography of Discipleship, Finding Our Way as the Church Today, exploring the third of the five contexts of discipleship, the personal context, you and a crew. And you can listen to that message again through our regular GBC Sermons podcast. But for now, Jess, I'm interested on your thoughts coming out of Mark's message.
The message blew me away, Matt. The cinematography and the like...
Those asides?
The techniques used. Oh, my gosh. It was riveting. Yeah. It was absolutely riveting. Yeah, the way he just stepped aside, the camera moved with him.
I believe it's called.
It really drove that point home. Yeah, loved it. Loved it. Some more of those would be great. Just some transitions, maybe some like snaps to disappear next time.
Like your PowerPoint transition slide.
Yeah.
Mm,
yeah.
Love
Mark,
that.
Take note. But going back to my experience with our life group, Matt.
Gosh.
I did like what he said about the disciples were probably friends because they'd spent 3 years together with Jesus, seeing amazing things and just going along for the ride with him. But first and foremost, they were there to learn and to follow Jesus. Mm. And that kind of, hit home for me a little bit in the ingredient we were missing.
Oh, it's real.
I liked that focus. Yeah. What about you?
Absolutely. I was the same.
You're like, meh.
I'm like, oh, awkward. This is awkward. I've grown. I've grown since then.
Yeah.
Let's all just take a step back, shall we? No, but I find it interesting that, in my experience, when a small group forms, it's almost easier to focus on Jesus because you're not, you're not quite ready to show all your cards yet.
Yeah.
And then as you get more comfortable with people, and I've experienced this in a number of different contexts, whether it's like the transparent context, like you and a few, those close friendships or even in small group settings, where the closer you get as friends, it almost seems like the less you talk about Jesus, because then you just talk about the itty gritty stuff inside, but again, not from the perspective of faith. So I thought Mark's kind of naming of that was really helpful. Mm. And it's just kind of gotten my mind kind of ticking over of like, okay, so why do we do that? And how do we kind of stop that? But I don't know, maybe he'll talk about that later in the podcast. Mm-hmm. We'll wait and see. Well, I think it's time for us to start looking at the three big questions submitted through Slider this week. So what have we got, Jess?
Question one is, what are some of the misconceptions that we have about small groups? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Perfect. We all have baggage. We all bring things in.
We do. Question two, how does the personal context overlap with the other five contexts? Mm. I know personally Mark Rader is very excited for this question.
He is very excited.
So I'm expecting some great things. And question three, how do we best prepare ourselves as we consider stepping into a small group?
Yeah, sweet.
Potentially just getting someone to introduce you to the group is probably
first. Yeah, thank you, Danielle.
First cab off the rank.
Would have loved that. Can I say that the guys in the group did a great job?
Beautiful.
Like, just
well
brought
done,
me
GBC.
In. Brought me in. Loved them.
Yeah.
They were
good.
Fantastic.
And here you are still.
I'm still here. Yeah. So it did not scare me off. I did then have to pray for someone that night. Biggest fear was remembering their name.
Yes.
I got it right.
This young man, we just pray over him, Jesus.
Lord, you know him.
Classic youth leader technique.
Classic. Well, before we just go completely rogue with this podcast, there is only one thing missing, and that is the man himself, Mark Rader. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks, Matt. Hi, Jess.
Hello. Our intros give him too much of an ego. Can we bring that down? The man himself, the only one we're here for.
It's so true.
I mean, he's Mark Rader, the senior pastor. Hello.
He's all right.
But in a series on discipleship, I'm not sure that's the right emphasis.
So, Mark, Jess and I have aired our dirty laundry of small groups.
Well and truly.
Do you have any experiences in a small group?
Actually, relatively limited.
And clearly this is a space for you to grow in.
Apparently.
We'll pray for you.
Apparently. I found that the groups that I have been a part of, I've been the leader of. That's been enjoyable. That hasn't been necessarily a detrimental thing, but I have only rarely been in a group setting, and I wouldn't even say it was a life group per se, but it was like a leaders in training thing is over a summer in Canada. So it was 2 months of kind of being with the same kind of cohort. And that was perhaps more formative, but I wasn't leading it. I was just kind of participating in it. But most of the rest of my experience has been perhaps more from the leadership perspective. And when I stepped into the role of the senior pastor, I had a conversation with a friend, a colleague of mine. Just kind of went, what do you do in this? Like, because it seems weird for the senior pastor to be in a group. Like, does that make that group super special?
Does it, it does.
Let's join mine.
You know, and how much can I share then about things that are going on in my life if they relate to the church? And he just, he kind of said he kind of tends to drift in and out of kind of those sorts of circumstances and tends to do kind of short-term groups for a specific purpose. And so like it was, I find that dynamic kind of intriguing. I've been visiting the life groups. Well, I was until lockdown.
Until COVID ruined everything.
I got through about, I think I got through about a quarter of them before. And that was really nice to be a part of that. But no, I haven't had heaps of experiences. The churches that I was a part of before I came to Gaimea didn't have them.
Oh, that blows my mind because I just feel like it's like
it's compulsory.
It's Christian 101, isn't it? Yeah. Church 101.
Yeah. Well, I've been in churches for a long time. No, well, maybe actually, I might tell a lie. I think that the because I was this is a long story, but I was
we're ready.
I was working as a youth volunteer in a church that I didn't attend, and then I eventually became the youth pastor there for 4 years because that's how that rolled. And I think they may have, I think they did have life groups, but I was never kind of a part of them because of what we were doing with the youth ministry, and the church before that was too small to really have.
They were a small group.
They were a small group in lots of ways, and that wasn't really the emphasis.
Bless.
So. Yeah, yeah. So that's been
that
my experience of it.
The long story that we were promised. No, but it was quite succinct. We'll take it. You don't like sneak off to the uni to have a small group with other theologians?
The uni. The
uni. Where he works?
Morling College.
Is it not?
Is it a uni?
I'm sorry, the college?
You don't sneak up to the college? I haven't been, don't know.
I think that... we'll probably get into this, but I think that the issue of what the personal context is meant to do is perhaps more important to me than the actual, okay, I've got a group of like six people, you know, or seven people or eight people. I think that there are groups that I would say that I'm a part of that would probably fall into the right size, probably don't meet regularly enough to fall into a life group category, but are really life-giving in that sense. So I meet with a handful of pastors of larger Baptist churches. We try to meet four times a year whenever we can, which is not nearly regular enough to say that's a life group. And it's not a life group in lots of ways. But we're talking about, you know, about how we're traveling. We're able to talk about that quite freely because we're all kind of in the same boat. We're able to pray for each other about pretty specific things and talk also about kind of where our churches are at. So I find that really life-giving space. Again, it's not a life group, but I think it functions for me a little bit in the discipleship space, particularly about kind of keeping me on mission in that sense, right? Like it's good to get together and be able to talk about. So, you know, we all feel called to lead churches so that people know Jesus. How are we going with that?
Yeah.
What's working? What's not working? What are we thinking through? Do you have any helpful resources?
Like that we can steal. You
know, well, that goes without saying. Yeah. Just why I didn't say it. You know? Appropriate is actually
appropriate.
The,
okay,
the term that way.
Whatever makes you feel better.
So yeah, so I think that in that sense, it functions for me a little bit like that, and I think that that's a valuable thing to think of. Like as I mentioned in the message on Sunday, there are other formats. Like our response is going to be primarily life groups.
Yeah,
but I do believe that you know our families. You know, if you think about a family, you know. Mom, dad, a few kids, maybe, you know, grandparents or aunts and uncles who are close enough that there's a little bit of that interaction. You get that relational support and closeness. But if there's a unity around faith, then there's, you know, like we learn heaps from our parents and, you know, eventually, you know, and our children get older, we learn from our kids as well, you know. So there's a sense then that that's a life group in kind of a more direct way. Again, the question becomes intentionality. It's just as easy for a Christian family to rarely talk about faith as it is for a group of friends to get together and have takeaway and
Yeah, it's easy, know. Okay? It's easy to slip into.
You were the one who brought the judgment, Jess, okay? Don't get all sassy
now. I was
also
the one who brought all of the banter and the like.
You brought the wine.
Yeah, that's true. I did bring the wine. Yeah. Look, anyway, am I my worst enemy, okay?
We digress.
Wow. There's a little bit of guilt going on here.
No, it was a good time. I regret nothing.
How has this space become a confessional? I don't understand. But before we get
just
too
keeping
deep.
Keeping it real for the listeners. Just keeping it real.
Well, I think now's a good time to get into the big three.
Very good. So obviously all of us have had a little bit of experience with life groups, some good, some bad, some ugly.
A mixed bag, let's say.
But for those people who kind of have been too afraid to step into that space or just not ready yet or not prepared, what are some of the misconceptions that we have about small groups?
I mean, I think that for many of us, and I know that this is true in my experience of discipleship generally, is that some of the formative experiences become normative for us, right? Mm. So whatever the first experience I had of a life group, that becomes, for me, that's what life groups become.
Yeah.
And so if you've had an experience that's been good, you know, like it's been really helpful and life-giving and you really grew, well, you're going to expect that in every life group, but you're also going to expect every life group to look pretty much like that one did, right? You know, and so I think that I think that can become kind of a category of misconception, right? That it has to look like it did. And I think that would probably, for me, be one of the bigger misconceptions, that a life group has to look a certain way.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, we have to study the Bible, and if we're not getting into the Greek and the Hebrew, then we're not doing it right. Or, you know, that it's primarily about praying for each other and, you know, Bible studies kind of, you know, we do that occasionally. Or it's like, so I think there's all sorts of different views of it. And I think we can not fall into the trap per se, but we can end up thinking that that's how a life group has to be. And I think that in reality, and this is one of the things I've quite liked about this book, Discipleship That Fits, and exploring this series, is the idea that if we know why we're gathering in a life group, then we can shape it to meet those outcomes, right? Like, you know, like let's say that there was no way that the group that you guys were a part of when you were kind of mostly just focusing on a relationship, what if there was no way that group could have changed? Like you were stuck with each other, you'd signed some sort of contract, you could never get out of it. But you came to the realization that, you know what? We're basically just a group of friends. You could have changed what you did. Like you could have said, okay, so let's have the conversation. We're a group of friends. We know each other pretty well. What do we need to do to make this really work for our discipleship?
Yeah.
What does it look like? And you probably could have solved it. And it would have looked perhaps different, you know, 5 years ago than it might look now. You know, I think life stage and maturity and involvement in other aspects of church life, all of those things shape what a life group needs to be. So there's no reason why it has to look exactly the same all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In fact, that can be detrimental. If we run, you know, if you're in a group and you've been in the group for 20 years and you do the same thing now you did 20 years ago, I want to know if that's worked for you, if you're growing every single year. Year on year because of what you're doing, you need to write a book because everyone's going to want a piece of that.
Yeah.
Or have we just become comfortable with some of the things that we're doing? So I think form or structure, I think can become a fairly big misconception. I do think that it's a misconception that that's the only form that can take.
Yeah.
You know, and again, as I said, like for us as a church, it's, you know, we can't control the family, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that's not our job. And, you know, short term, you know, like the leadership training group that I was a part of or other cohorts that we're a part of that are valuable for our discipleship, they're kind of outside of our purview. So life groups are still going to be what we're going to focus on. But there are places, you know, I think I keep coming back to this. I think, you know, of, you know, Matt, you and Sam and the boys, you know, three young kids. I mean, I know that you're leading a life group with the young adults, but there's a certain level of like intentionality to do that because like it's not the most convenient time of life to have stuff on at night.
Amen. I hear that.
Do you know
I receive
what I'm saying?
It.
Yeah. And so being intentional is really quite important in that space. But you know, your family kind of becomes a little life group, you know, where, you know, your and Sam's spirituality and the expression of that will shape the spirituality and relationship that the boys have with God. And so, like, there's discipleship there.
Yeah.
Pressure's on.
I know. Trust me, I feel it every day.
Yeah. But I think everyone does. And so I think when we kind of go, I've got my family and then I have to add a life group. And I don't want this to be an out for anyone who's got, oh, it's a little bit tough right now, so we're not going to get into a life group. Because I think there's value in, you know, I think you would say that.
Yeah, can I just say to my life group out there, I love you, I see you, and I miss you immensely.
Yeah.
Come home to me.
Yeah. You know, and there is real value in that. But I think we need to just be aware, and again, maybe it's being kind to ourselves. Mm. There are other spaces where we can do that. The big thing is not to say I'm in a life group, tick. Mm. The big thing is, am I growing? Mm. Am I becoming more like Jesus? Am I learning his ways and his methods? Am I stepping into his invitation? And if you're not, doesn't matter how many life groups you're in, like, I don't want people just in life groups to say, I'm in a life group.
Yeah.
I want you in a life group so you grow. I don't care if you're in a life group per se. Like, you know, but we just, you know, I think we believe that if our life groups are strong and supported and, you know, kind of effective, then that's a great place for people to grow. So I'm kind of all over the shop in terms of the answer.
Yeah, in terms of the purpose of today's talk, join a life group. But you don't have to be in a life group.
Well, join a life group in order that you get discipled.
Yeah.
In order that you get discipled, that, you know, like, again, it's not that either or of, you know, can you have friends or do you have to just be about discipleship? It is both and. And if you want to join a life group just to kind of make connections, that's not a bad motivation.
No.
But at the end of the day, like, are you getting closer to Jesus? Because that's actually our main business. Mm. So, like, I don't know what other misconceptions you guys think are out there about life groups.
I've been thinking about this. Like, I think that there's a misconception that it should just be really easy. Like that you should just be able to, you know, drop in, and it just kind of, and this group just kind of take you off. And so I feel like, and I'm speaking really generally here, but like, I feel like I've heard a number of conversations where, it's kind of like, oh, you know, it's been a couple of weeks and I'm not feeling it. Like it hasn't, I haven't had that experience yet, or it hasn't kind of filled me up yet. And I think that we need to remember, like, you know, in the personal context, you put in, like, you know, half a dozen to a dozen people together, like, you've got to go through like a process to develop a dynamic as a group before you can, probably even before you can get to the whole discipleship piece, because you know, it's the classic, like, oh, what is it? Forming, storming, norming, performing.
Yep.
Did I get it?
You did.
Nailed it. Thank you. See, I listen. I hear things. I know things. You know, that's a process. And every single time you join a new person in, you got to go through that process again, which, you know, causes a whole bunch of issues, right? One, it means that there's a process to get to a point where a life group might be feeling like it's performing in the way that it's supposed to be and meeting your expectations of sowing into your discipleship and challenging you and supporting you and all that kind of stuff. But then it also, you know, it means that there might be some hesitation to adding a new person because it's like, well, then we have got to go through that whole process again because, you know, that whole theory is that you add one or subtract one person from a group and you've got to go through that process all over again. And so, you know, I think expectations, like one of the, you know, to bring it back to the question, what are some of the misconceptions? Some of the misconceptions are that everyone expects the same thing and everyone wants the same thing and that this is all going to be super easy. It's actually not. It takes time and you kind of got to be in it to win it.
Yeah.
So I think that's, you know, in some of the conversations that I've had and even some of my own experiences, like I've been confronted with that, like, oh, actually, I think we're on separate pages and it's because I think we came into this group wanting different things. And unless we're going to have that conversation, we're just going to continue to be on the wrong or on different pages, not even a wrong page, but just different pages, which means neither of us are going to get out of this group what we want to get out of this group.
Yeah, and I think clarity around expectations is really important. Mm. You know, I think, again, not to say that the disciples were a small group, because they weren't really. they were a group of disciples. But there was no confusion about their purpose.
Yeah.
Right? They were following Jesus, and they were learning from him. And so at least that expectation was clear. Now, you know,
or
Jesus
maybe not
is,
to Judas.
Yeah, that's right. You know.
He kind of missed that point.
But even for their... you know, the purpose that Jesus, the mission that he was going to give them, I think that's where, you know, some of their, they had some different views about how that would pan out. But there was some clarity of expectation. I think you're right, Matt, when you get groups that are, that haven't had the conversation about what are we doing here? I think that can become problematic.
Yeah.
Or when you get a group that's like, you know, long-term members and you change one person and they're not aware that we kind of go back to the start again.
Yeah.
You know, and so it ends up being there's the new person and they're new forever. Yeah. Because until they get up to speed with the in-jokes and know all the history, they're not in, you know.
Yeah,
I
felt that.
Yeah, so, like, oh my days.
Triggered. Yeah. Well, you know, like I know of a church that I can't remember what the time frame is, but every 2 years or 3 years, they basically say groups like, we're going to break you up and put you in new ones. So over the course of people being at the church for 15 years, they end up knowing like 45 different people because every 3 years they're in new groups. And that's just part of their culture, right? So that's the expectation. And so everyone knows right off the get-go, this is how we're going to work this, which is one way to do that so that everybody has to go through the process of norming, for, you know, like all that kind of stuff again. Whereas I think, you know, for like in our context, we haven't necessarily done that. You know,
I see such like pros and cons to that process.
Oh, we can barely sit in a different seat each Sunday. So I don't know how we'd go with completely so switching up the life groups.
Yeah, no, there'd be a revolution. Yeah. I think, you know, like
a rebellion.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, but I think that there are, you know, I think there are pros and cons to those, both of those. So, Jess, what do you reckon? Like misconceptions? Or?
I think initially coming into my first life group, I just thought it's got to get really intense really quickly. It's got to be super deep and meaningful. And I've got to like spill my guts and share all my thoughts and my struggles. And that's not necessarily the case because you're meeting these people sometimes for the first time, which it was for my first life group. It takes time to become comfortable and open. But I remember my mum saying in my very first life group, like, life groups really flourish when people are truthful, like when people actually like just stop talking about all the crap, like soft furnishings on the outside and actually get stuck into it. So I mean, it took me a while to get there, but I think that is really important in a life group to not be like, I'm an amazing Christian. I struggle with nothing. Like, hey guys, here's where I'm actually
No one
at.
Believes that.
Yeah. But everyone tries to convince everyone else that they're.
It's such a thing, isn't it?
Yeah. So I think that it's okay not to go in so hard, so fast. Like, just give it the space. Time. Yeah.
It's not quite that we try to convince people about it. We're not going to give you any evidence to the contrary.
Yeah, that's why I'm just trying to convince ourselves.
So I'm not going to share anything. Yeah, right. Lest you see the truth. That's true. Yeah, I think you're right, Jess. That there's some of that sense of it's kind of to your point, Matt, about that this should be easy or it should be quick, or I'm going to be asked to move faster than the point of willingness. Mm. You know, that I'm going to be forced into. Yeah. You know, whatever it might be. So I think I think those are interesting. Mm. Yeah.
Well, let's get on to question two. So Mark, we're halfway through the five relational contexts. And I've got to admit, while you were preaching on Sunday, my mind was kind of ticking over about how the personal context, how there's so much opportunity for it to overlap with the other four contexts, particularly in my mind, like the transparent, which was the one that we did 2 weeks ago, I could already see, okay, like these kind of overlap and they kind of coincide with each other. So I'd love to hear your kind of take on it. How does the personal context overlap with the other five contexts?
I think it was a couple of weeks ago we talked about the overlapping circles and like the Venn diagram and making sure that there's enough kind of overlap between these five to further our discipleship. And I think that image continues to kind of play in my mind a little bit. Like it isn't about saying all five have to be completely overlapped, but we need to make sure that there's something where there's some overlap. And so I think that this is like, it's a great question to keep coming back to because I think it can be easy for us to say, well, you know, as long as, you know, I'm good with God and I go to church occasionally, I'm good to go.
Yeah.
Which are the two outer, like number one and number five in terms of the contexts. And while I wouldn't want to say to somebody, well, no, you know, imagine spending time with God.
You're wrong.
But I think that it's these middle three that are that are where the real engine room of mission takes place.
Yeah.
You know, so me and God, I think one of the dangers, one of the weaknesses is that it can be very inward focused and can be very personal, which is, I think, part of its strength, right? And the church can be like, you know, the big gathering can be very impersonal.
Yeah.
You know, kind of low accountability. And in some regards, actually equally as personal as me and God. I go to a church that I like, where the teaching is good, where the preaching, sorry, where the worship is kind of fits with me, where my kids like the, like, so it's quite a personal experience. It's in these middle three that we actually, I think, see the heightened importance of the mission of Jesus. And where, you know, like you think about the transparent context, it's taking the, hopefully the work that the Holy Spirit's doing in your life and making sure that it's applied, where it's kind of thought through, where it's not just left in my journal or my notebook or in my head or my heart kind of going, that was a wonderful time with God.
Yeah.
You know, that's all there was to it. Like, it helps ground it. And I think that the personal context then takes it one step further and takes it, I guess one step further in a couple of different directions. So I think the personal context is one of those places where we can begin to serve other people.
Yeah.
Right? We kind of do that in the transparent context, if it's one, me and a few, one or two other people. But we're really focused, I think, quite strongly on discipleship in those smaller contexts. Mm. This is a little bit broader in its impact. You know, like, it's not just about talking about our discipleship with one or two others and being, you know, really intentional about our accountability and those sorts of things. In a life group, I get to know you. And so I'm concerned for how Matt and Sam are going with three young kids, and, you know, the youngest of whom still doesn't sleep. And,
send help.
You know,
he's so cute, though. So
a little cherub, isn't he?
You know, but so, like, I end up concerned about a very physical, material, natural issue that is not particularly discipleship oriented, but is nonetheless a way that I can begin to serve, right? So if it weren't locked down, you come around, you take the kids out, you guys have a couple hours to sleep.
Oh my gosh, please.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and it's an opportunity to serve, right? I'm concerned when I, you know, hear how Jess and Jacob are going and that his work's dried up because of the COVID thing or whatever, you know, whatever the case might be. And you're like, oh, you know, how can we help? Or so there's an opportunity for us to start showing love to one another, which I think is a really important part of our discipleship. But then there's also the opportunity for us to begin to kind of to teach and to learn from each other, you know, because it's just big enough that, you know, we can actually share our reflections on a passage of scripture or our experience of God in a particularly difficult time or a particular way that we've seen the hand of God or whatever the case might be. And we can begin to kind of teach and engage with others and help them see the hand of God. So I think that it just starts expanding into the areas of service, and that's really quite valuable, because ultimately that's the whole point of the church, right? That we're engaged in the mission of God. And so I think the personal context is the first place we really get to kind of put some of that into practice.
Yeah.
And again, not to say that when it's you and a few that you don't show any love or care for the people that you're meeting with, but it's just a different kind of dynamic.
Yeah.
There's more opportunity. And I think that's a really important kind of piece in that.
Yeah. I think also, like, as you were talking, what stood out for me, like when you were talking about the divine and the public context and how they're quite personal, because, you know, it's you and God, and so, you know, no one's watching, so it's just you and God.
Yeah.
But then, you know, in the public context, where at church, you know, we speak to everyone, we've got community, but, like, you know, it's over a coffee in the atrium, like there's, you know, people, 10, 50, 100, I don't know how many people. There's a lot of people around. So it's not
a small talk zone.
Thank you. I just could not get that out.
You needed help.
Yeah.
I helped you.
The small talk zone. That's good. Yeah. I like that.
So like they're both personal contexts. The middle three stop your faith from being a private thing. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. So it makes available spaces where you can share and have input and that accountability, which is what we've been talking about, you know, for weeks now. Mm. And I think ensuring that our faith is not a private thing is actually really important. Yeah. I think when faith is private, which I know is a very, you know, it's an old school kind of mentality, and there was a time where that was just widely accepted. I think particularly for our younger demographics, they struggle with that because it's like, well, it means I feel completely alone in my journey of faith. I feel completely alone in my discipleship. I feel completely alone in my struggles when it comes to faith, and everyone else looks great and I'm, you know, the heathen over here kind of thing, you know, speaking the from experience. Mess. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was exactly how I felt like when I first came to church. So I think there's real power in kind of taking the privacy out of faith.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for our church, I think for many churches, you know, time with God, the big context when everyone's all in, and the life groups are the three contexts that we have. Mm. And I think the transparent and, as we'll look at, the social context are really helpful contexts to focus on because of the direction that you get from the life group, right? Mm-hmm. So in a life group setting, as I begin to serve, I begin to experience kind of areas of giftedness and kind of strengths, and you can affirm that in one another, but it's not quite a big enough group to really put them into practice. Mm-hmm. And we might still be a little bit nervous about doing that because there's only seven of us. And, you know, it's a little bit awkward, but in that slightly larger group that's not the church size, well, you know, we can really start exercising our gifts and really get on with stuff. We are known in a life group.
Yeah.
Right? But it's not as intimate as a transparent context. Mm. And, you know, having the next context up, the social context provides us with a place where we can enter in even a little bit more slowly, right? Where it's the boundaries are not quite as tight, right? Because you're including more people focused on mission. And I think that mission component is also kind of, you kind of sense it in the life group space, right? I think, I wouldn't say that they're worse, but I think life groups can become kind of nice little pockets of friendship where we, you know, we talk about Jesus and we grow in our discipleship, but we're not necessarily using that to really leverage into mission. Mm. So I think that's where having all five contexts is so important.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. I guess we're going to continue to unpack that more and more as we move into the social context and then the public context. But it's good to kind of, I think, each time we're introduced to a new context to kind of consider, okay, what role does this play in the overall, well, I guess the overall topography of this series, and how they overlap is really important because we don't want them to just be these five islands that you just kind of tap in and tap out of at different times during the week or different times, you know, during your life. Mm. They have such an opportunity to intersect with one another and interact with one another that really create a deepening in discipleship.
Yeah, I'd also probably say that because life groups tend to be a project of the church, right? They actually create a way, and I'm not sure that we've done this particularly effectively at Gaimea, but they become a way to be reminded that we're part of the church.
Yeah.
Right? That we're part of a community of faith who want to see lives changed by Jesus, and we want to be inviting everyone that we meet everywhere we go to do the same, and right, all that kind of stuff. And so there's this midweek kind of pause to kind of go, oh yeah, we're the church.
Yeah.
And this 8 or 9 or 10 or 12 of us, like we're the church.
Yeah.
In microcosm, right? We're not the full church, but we're still part of the church. And I think that's another part of the value of the life group, the personal context in particular, because it connects and reminds us that we never stop being the church. Mm. Even when I'm by myself, you know,
alone with God. Praying,
alone with God. I'm still part of the church. Like I'm not in isolation. I'm actually part of a wider body. Mm. And so I think the life groups, but the personal context, you and a crew, right, becomes a really useful space for us to go, oh yeah. Like I'm actually part of, you know, and it's not that being part of Gaimea Baptist Church is the most important thing, obviously, but I'm part of the church. Like I'm part of the local expression of the kingdom of God. And that reminds us then of what, like, what are we on about?
Yeah.
And so I think that that has some real value as well for reminding us about who we are and what we're on about, and you know, that we're like in a life group, an even more localized expression of a local expression.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that that's pretty valuable too.
Yeah. Awesome. Love that. Well, let's get into question three.
So this question is aimed more for people who aren't already in a life group, but I suppose we can kind of look at it as well for those who are. How can we tweak our attitude and things coming into the next week of life group to get the most out of it? How can we best prepare ourselves as we consider stepping into a small group?
I suppose there's any number of ways.
Let's hear them.
Yes, that's right. I'm ready.
That's right. I think, you know, one of the things that we keep coming back to in this series is the importance of intentionality. And almost anything you do that's a little bit more intentional will help.
Yeah.
Right? Like, even if it's just a little, right? It's going to change the way in which you think about things. So I reckon that one of the most important things we can do to get the most out of life groups is commit to being there.
Yeah.
Like, you know, to allow almost no excuse to get in the way. You know, like, I know what it's like, you know, the end of a day. Like, when I was leading a life group, it was great because I was actually leading it and it was at my house, which meant that I couldn't get out of it. Right? But I will admit, there were nights when I was like, oh, wow, okay, it's been a long day.
Jesus, take the wheel.
It's been a long week. Like, if I had the choice, I don't know that I'd go. And so we really need to kind of, you know, hold ourselves accountable to say, okay, I will commit to doing this. Like, I am not going to miss this unless I'm dead or I'm traveling, you know, or whatever the case might be. And I think that intentionality is really important, not just for me. Like, I remember, you know, we had, I don't know how many people on the books, but we rarely had everybody there.
Yeah.
And that meant that, you know, sometimes you'd go 2 or 3 weeks without seeing somebody, or different members of the group wouldn't see each other for 6 or 7 weeks or whatever the case might be. And so you just kind of like, it's not helpful for other people if I'm not there either. And, you know, life is busy and all that sort of stuff. But to the best of our ability, if you're going to be in a life group, commit to being there. I think that intentionality is one of the most significant things we can do. And then I think, you know, you want to be, you know, if there's, I won't say, well, it's probably homework of sorts. If there's homework of sorts, do it. Like, if your life group is going to be discussing the sermon and you weren't there on Sunday, you weren't able to log on, like, make sure you listen to it beforehand. Yeah. So you're not coming in blind, kind of going, I don't know what they were talking about.
Yeah.
Again, because then you're not going to get anything out of it. But you're also not going to be able to contribute, right? Like, and I think that's part of it, you know. We actually want to be able to contribute into other people's lives as they contribute into ours. So if there's homework, do the homework.
Yeah.
Again, if at all possible, right? And then I think that, you know, you just want to be, I think you want to be focused on the discipleship outcomes too.
Yeah.
Right. So you need to be a little bit, you know, purposeful about that. And it may be that a life group is not going to fully meet your discipleship needs, or that's where that transparent group becomes more important. Where I catch up with Jess and Matt every week, and we talk about what God's doing in our lives, and you know, and I can be really specific because it's just the three of us, and we're not really there to kind of talk with 8 people. It's just the three of us, so we can get around the horn pretty quickly, and this is what I'm focused on. So a life group might not be like 100% all about your discipleship in that sense, but if you're thinking to yourself, I'm not sure I'm growing, right? Well, then, you know, you need to figure that one out, you know? So I think that you being aware of how you can grow in that space, whether it be in your love and care and support for others, you know, committing to praying for your life group, you know, whenever you think of them, you know, or, you know, every day, whatever you want to kind of work out in that space, where you want to, you know, be prepared and, you know, kind of push yourself to contribute. You know, you might feel like, oh, I don't have it all together. I don't know enough about the Bible. It beats me. What's going on? But I'm going to push myself to kind of contribute in that sense. You know, might be the other way around. I'm going to push myself to not contribute so much. You know,
that's definitely me.
You know, because it's just a matter of that intentionality in that space. I think, you know, we touched on it earlier. You know, with you know, Matt, your experience of, you know, going to that life group where you're just directed upstairs.
Yeah, that was heavy.
You know, and then talking about that whole, the forming and norming. I think that for groups that are well established, when you get, when you have new people join, to be a little bit more intentional and deliberate about kind of starting again. You know, and in one way, you don't really start again, but it's like, okay, so Jess has just joined our group. How can we make sure that she feels like she's in on the ground? You know, is it about, we're going to start a new study whenever a new person joins. We're going to go back to the whole, you know, some sort of foundational series that, you know, shapes us as a community. Like something that we kind of go, we do this every time we, you know, new people join us or whatever the case might be. But just being really intentional about those things. I think those things spring to mind as being the most helpful. I don't know what you guys have found in terms of, you know, like I think that the willingness to contribute part, you know, I think Matt, the fact that you showed up and then you were asked to pray for somebody.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Like, I think lots of people would have been like, no, or if they did, they would have smoke bombed the next week.
I was too scared to say no.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll work with it. But, you know, I think, you know, you do want to kind of, you want to participate, you know, Jess, you said it's kind of a similar sort of thing when you talked about, you know, you need to be truthful. And yeah, you want to do that to the point of willingness, and you don't want to overshare, and you don't want to, you know, share everything the first night. But that whole idea of just, I'm going to be part of what makes this work.
Yeah.
Whether by praying, even though I might be a little bit uncomfortable and I can't remember your name, or I'm going to be a little bit more truthful about how I'm going, then I might feel like I want to be. I think those things can be really, really helpful as well. I don't know what you guys have found kind of joining different life groups and what's kind of helped make those things work?
I think, like, in terms of preparing ourselves as we consider to step into that space, I think something, and you know, we've kind of been talking about this throughout the podcast, but that whole, it will take time. And so allowing, like, giving yourself the time to start to experience the fruit of that small group. You know, I think too often we're kind of like, oh, I've been once or twice and, you know, still don't feel a part of the group or not sure if I'm feeling it, you know, the spirit hasn't like come down upon me and slain me or anything like that. So, and then it's just like, oh, so it's clearly not working. It's like, oh, you haven't really given it a shot. So I think, you know, as you prepare yourself to step into that space, you need to prepare yourself for a little bit of a long-term commitment. Now, I'm not saying years, although it might turn into that, and that's actually a sign that it's working really well. But, like, you need to give it a couple of months, right? Like, if this is a group that's meeting every week, then kind of go, hey, I'm going to give it 3 months. Because that's 12 weeks in which you're a part of a group. I'd imagine that might be two series that you might cover. It gives you enough time to get to know people for them to get to know you. Like, you've actually given it a good hot go. Now, sometimes you get into a group and it's like, listen, the dynamic's not working, or hey, actually my life circumstances have changed and so to be able to be there on a regular basis has become harder. Like, I get that. Like, that's totally fine. It's okay to get to a point and go, I'm not sure if this is going to work. But to give it a red hot go, I think we're sometimes too quick to press the eject button. So you kind of need to psych yourself up for that and prepare yourself for that and just kind of go, well, no, I'm going to give this actual time for it to bear fruit for me.
And there may be, Matt, thinking about it from the other perspective, you know, like, you know, you're overseeing life groups here, you know, but you think, how do we help?
I am.
How do we help groups help people fit into,
yeah,
you know, like that whole thing about, you know, whether we have a couple of times a year where there's an intake and we say to groups, listen, here's your first 3 weeks after you've added two or three people.
Yeah.
Do these things. You know, I think as groups, we often don't know how to do that well either. Yeah. Like, I don't know how to make it easier for you. Just kind of, you know, join in. So let me help by saying, will you pray for that guy? You know, aren't I helping?
Yeah.
You
know?
Maybe, maybe not. So, you know, I think that there's a little bit both ways on that. Mm. But again, I think a lot of it comes down to intentionality. Mm. What about you, Jess?
I think for me, it's all about my mindset coming into the night, really, is a lot of the time I walk in, which is, I think is what went wrong with our life group, of like, great, get to catch up with my friends, see how everyone's going, see if they've got any struggles that I can help with, all that kind of stuff. But actually on the drive over or that day, kind of thinking, no, this is the time where I'm going to further my discipleship and actually get to know God a little bit more and grow in that space. And kind of flip it around and not that, hey, this is a gather, I'll bring the wine. There will still be wine. Like, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Gots to have the wine. But, yeah, making the focus more in my heart on God as I enter into that night. Yeah.
Mm. I love that.
It's good.
We'll give it a go. We'll give it a crack.
As long as we're being intentional.
That's right.
Well, that's awesome. Well, Mark, thanks so much for joining us for the Big Three today.
Pleasure.
Loved it.
Nice, Jess.
Sweet. Times. All right, Jess. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We started the night talking about some...
how terrible we are at life groups.
Let's not say terrible. Like, we prayed for each other. Anyway, that's what we're here for. After that discussion with Mark, like, what's kind of standing out for you in all of that?
I think the way that the context overlap was a really nice conversation in that this, you and the crew, actually gives more space, yes, to focus on Jesus and to spur each other on with your discipleship, that it's not a place you can hide, like those first two contexts. Yeah. It's not a private thing. It's quite a public thing. But also that allows for a bit more of, you know, like assisting each other. Where can I help you?
Yeah.
And making it, you know, spreading it out throughout the week, and it's not just the Wednesday night life group, that's where we kind of focus on God and get into the nitty gritty. But then how does that kind of extend into our week? I just really love that support that a life group offers.
It's just
so nice. It's such a nice little context.
It's a warm fuzzy.
Yeah, I'm sad that people who aren't Christians don't get that kind of support from a little gang of friends.
Yeah. And I think I was the same. As we're making our way through the five contexts, I'm really seeing that kind of that Venn diagram of how they can move around and overlap. And absolutely in different seasons, maybe one context is kind of becomes paramount and the other one, like, and there might be one that's kind of you don't have the capacity for or the time for or what have you. But that there are all these moving pieces, and what you want to do is you want to get them overlapping as much as possible.
Yeah.
And I think the more we kind of explore these contexts, the more I get hungry for that overlap, because I'm like, man, I'm really starting to see the different outcomes that each of these relationships have in my, not like in my faith, but also just in my, like in my life as well. Like, as you said, like there's support there, like not just in terms of faith, that's super important. But yeah, like what the church can do and how we can rally together in these different relationships is really profound and really amazing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm just getting kind of more hungry to explore the final two contexts and then just kind of get that final big picture of, okay, I can really see how this is all mapping out for me.
Yeah, and what am I lacking? What parts do I need to work on and
be
a bit more intentional?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
For sure.
Right on. D-Light. Well, my friend.
D-Light.
It's been fantastic seeing you again.
Good times. Off to deliver the babies.
Well, if you want to be a part of the conversation, make sure that you're there at one of our services this Sunday and that you snap the Slido QR code before the sermon to get involved. If you've enjoyed the Big Three podcast today, take the time to give a star rating and be sure to subscribe to stay up to date with all future episodes. Well, thanks for joining us for this week's Big Three and our deep dive into God's invitation for us all. Remember, there's no thought too small, no question too big.